Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if the whole world was wrong about the Brady Belichick feud.
And if LeBron is about to make the worst move of his Lakers career. Why is he a Laker in the first place? But we start with a Whitlock, like every day. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, man, I hope someone stands up to Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints this offseason. I hope they're not allowed to turn the NFL Competition Committee into a protest rally celebrating the victimhood of the Saints. In the aftermath of Sunday's controversial no pass interference loss to the Rams, Gail Benson, the owner of the Saints, released a statement yesterday making her intentions clear. She wrote, "No team should ever be denied the opportunity to reach the title game or simply win a game. Based on the actions or the inactions of those charged with creating a fair and equitable playing field. As is clear to all who watch the game, it is undeniable that our team and fans were unfairly deprived of that opportunity yesterday. I have been in touch with the NFL regarding yesterday's events and will aggressively pursue changes in the NFL policies to ensure no team and fan base is ever put in a similar position again." More than 500,000 Saints fans doubled down, signing a petition demanding the title game be replayed. Stop. The Saints are not victims. Not in my opinion. Victims are targeted. The referee who failed to call a penalty on this pass had no intentions of harming the New Orleans Saints. In fact, his motivation was to protect the integrity of the outcome. He failed to act because he didn't want a judgment call by the refs to decide the game. His intentions were good. They were appropriate. The NFL is a reality TV show. The playoffs are a series of season finales. The goal of a season finale is for it to end with as much drama as possible. You want your biggest stars to make the biggest plays to decide the outcome. No one tunes in to see the ref end the game with 2 minutes to play. Did the referees make a mistake in New Orleans this weekend? Yeah, so what? That's what humans do. No one died. The Saints still had two additional opportunities to win the game. They could have stopped Los Angeles on its ensuing possession, and the Saints could have scored on the opening possession of overtime. Listen, I understand the whining. I don't have a real problem with it. But all this insistence that the NFL ensure this never happens again, the belief that Sean Payton is going to use his position on the competition committee to right a wrong, give me a break. It's the kind of misguided, prisoner of the moment emotion that causes us to overreact and make mistakes. Football doesn't need more emphasis on pass interference. It needs less. Pass interference is the most important play in professional football, and it's also the most frustrating for fans. Let me repeat, football is a reality TV show. Nothing annoys viewers more than a ref standing on the sideline under a hood looking at a small screen. Nothing is more consistently aggravating than inconsequential contact between a DB and a receiver moving the football 35 yards downfield to the 1 yard line. It's all bad TV. The effort to placate Sean Payton's feeling of victimization could damage the game. Don't let it happen. The solution to what happened on Sunday is de-emphasizing pass interference, allowing more contact between receivers and DBs, and relieving some of the judgment calls from referees. Don't treat Payton and the Saints like victims. They're not. They're sore losers who made far more game-deciding mistakes than the referees did on Sunday. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts Eric Mangini and Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Saints look like sore losers here?
Mean, man. You mean.
I mean, really mean. No. One, I never heard Gail Benson speak, but I'm sure she doesn't sound like Martin Luther King. Can you work on your voiceover?
If I had done a woman's voice, I'd have got killed.
Oh, good point, good point. This whole sore loser psychology has always disturbed me from just growing up. When you're wronged in competition and you want to show integrity, but you also want to be not only objective, but specific about your gripe, it's weird that people like you always say there's an expiration date on you complaining about how you were wrong. Case in point, let's say I race Usain Bolt, and he false starts, but they let him keep running, and he's already faster than me, and he keeps running, and he beats me in a photo finish. do you know how long I'm going to complain about how y'all let him get away with a false start? To the day I die. If there's a situation where you're talking about you wronged me, I was a victim of the Music City Miracle. I just brought it up again yesterday. To the day I die, I can talk about my gripe. Why does that all of a sudden get termed sore loser? Sore loser to me is when you were beaten fair and square, and then you're making unnecessary gripes, or you're exaggerating the wrong that probably didn't even occur. This is not that case. This is not a conventional case of a sore loser. This is a team that if the referees just do their job in that one moment, they're going to win that game. So for me, sore loser is a little excessive and also out of place for this category.
I think where you stand on a call depends on where you sit. Like, I think the Tuck Rule call was a great call.
Oh.
And, I was in New England at the time. But even looking at this situation, there's no guarantee that they would have won the game. So it would have been down to 30 seconds, and they would have kicked a field goal. But if you look at the first game, the end of the first half, what did the Rams do? They went down at the end of the half with 26 seconds left and kicked a field goal. Could they have missed the field goal? A lot of things could have happened. Throughout the course of that game, they were letting these guys be physical. It happened through the whole game, and there were a lot of calls like that. In overtime, you could argue that the pass interference call that the Saints did get was a wrong call. That was too light a call. So you can argue that throughout the course of the game. And if you're in Kansas City, you're unhappy about the fact that the New England Patriots were able to go down and score in overtime and win the game without you getting the ball back. So there's a lot of things that people are going to be unhappy about. At the end of the game, was it a bad call? It was a bad call. Was it a guarantee that they would have won the game? Not necessarily.
Well, I was there, and when I saw it in real time, I was shocked. Shocked that they didn't call that. I mean,
the ball looked uncatchable.
I was watching it, and I played the game a long time looking at it, and I'm saying that is a no-brainer, pass interference. They're going to run the ball three times. First down, run the ball three times, game is over. Now, going back to what you said, by the way, that was very mean to put tears. You're mocking this man's pain. And you said nobody died, but I'll tell you this, and you people out there might not like this, but it does. It feels like somebody died. I played an NFC Championship game. We lost that game. I didn't get over it for a month. Literally went down to Mexico. I said, forget about the Pro Bowl. I'm not going. I said, I didn't even watch the Super Bowl that year. Literally, it was like somebody had kicked me in my gut, and we didn't even lose like that. We lost fair and square. We just couldn't score. To lose like this, it is a tragedy to these people. It is like somebody died. Literally, you can compare it to, it is a death to them. It's that serious. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not saying, well, yeah, it's like somebody, they literally feel like a part of them has died, and it's something they'll carry with them for the rest of their life. Some people will get over it, but there are certain people out there that will never get over it. It will never get over it. It's very, very tough to deal with.
But it didn't end the game. It didn't end the game, and they had an opportunity to then go stop the Rams. They had an opportunity to get the first possession overtime and go down and score. And you wonder, was the focus on that call the thing that distracted them for the rest of the game? Was their inability to move on from that the thing that made a difference in the rest of that game?
They butchered everything. I mean, calling that pass on the first down that did not go that way, that whole clock shouldn't have been like that. They messed that up, and I'll give that to it. And yes, maybe they could have, but the chances are if they would have got that call and then just take a knee three times in a row, then kick a field goal with 15 seconds left, the game is over. They're in the Super Bowl. So I understand where these fans are coming from. Have a little compassion. Have a heart. Feel for them. It's bad.
But now let's go to the competition committee and ensure that this never happens again. Well, I'm just sorry. There, as long as humans are involved, there's going to be mistakes. Somebody in that competition committee, Mike Tomlin, somebody's got to stand up to Sean Payton, who to me is going too far, and Gail Benson going too far, talking about changing rules because something bad happened to the New Orleans Saints. Give me a break.
Well, I think a lot of the rules and the changes in the rules is because of the effect on the economy and the business of football. So if you talk about the game being safer, in part, you want to make the game safer because you're selling it to soccer moms and second-generation athletes like Tony and myself. So the economics do sway you in terms of how you want to change the rules and the competition committees and their votes. So
instant replays about safety.
Yeah, you know what? This one's about integrity of the game. This is about the fan who's sitting there saying, hey, is there another interest involved other than the fair and square competition? So, yeah, as Gail Benson even said in her letter, if you read it fully, it started off talking about this play. And then expand it to the fan base and how she's blessed to be a New Orleans Saints and blessed to be from New Orleans. You know what? You have to reset that fan base. And the NFL has to reset its fan base as well. You can't let them have an entire offseason thinking, oh, at any given time, the referees may or may not call it. So the competition committee is influenced by the economy of the game, which is based off of, in part, the integrity of the game.
No calls have been a part of sports since the beginning of time. And fans getting their feelings hurt has been a part of sports since the beginning of the time. The St. Louis Cardinals and their fans in 1985, Don Dinkinger messed up a call unintentionally that people in St. Louis believe cost them a World Series title in Game 6. Now, they blew the rest of that game. They had other opportunities to finish Game 6, and then they came out and got their butts kicked in Game 7, 11-0. So, I've seen St. Louis, the city is fine. All the people, that the fans of the St. Louis Cardinals, they're fine. The New Orleans Saints got dealt some adversity and a painful loss. Heartbreak is a part of sports.
How do you get over it so quickly, though? I mean, yeah. The game was 2 days ago.
Listen, if they want to be upset already.
Yeah, right. You're talking about 85 versus 2 days later.
But again, if they want to be upset, fine. But all this, we got to change the rules and people signing a petition. The petition is about Roger Goodell overturning the outcome and sending the Saints to the Super Bowl or making them replay the game. Stop it.
It's called evolution. And for you to say there's not one rule that's been the same from the beginning of sports, guess what? Jason Whitlock is anti-progress. You know what? We have to evolve. The game continues to evolve, and this may be a part of that evolution. You're saying victims weren't intended and harmed in the process.
Intent. There's no intent.
Do you understand the difference in intent is like manslaughter to murder? You know what I'm saying? I didn't mean to hurt you, but guess what? You gone. So guess what? I still have to deal with that. So don't use intent as your only gauge. You don't have to try and hurt me and still feel the pain.
But how many times have pass interference calls been called and the ball's on the 1 yard line and it shouldn't have been called? It's worked the other way for years, and nobody really argues that strongly about that. We tried to over officiate the catch rule and that didn't work out, so then we had to go back this year and change that. And then there were a bunch of balls that looked like obviously they weren't catches, but everybody was afraid to overrule it, so we went the extreme the other way. I like the idea of being able to review calls. I think that should be an open-ended deal. But look, this human error is part of the game.
Yeah, sure. I agree with you. I agree with that. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. And you know, I agree with saying, Sean, don't worry. Look, the game, don't overcomplicate this stuff. It was just a bad no call by that ref. It really was. And I believe it was. They let him play in the playoffs.
I'm not 1,000%.
But that was just a bad call. You don't think it was a bad call?
No. One of the two calls. Helmet to helmet should have been called.
Right. So that's one of them.
Pass interference to me is totally questionable. When you watched it live, that ball was uncatchable. And I believe it was past the dude, actually. And it wasn't catchable. It was a bad throw. Another one of Drew Brees' bad throws on that same drive. And it really wasn't, because I was upset with the DB. Like, why did you touch him? You didn't need to do anything.
Yeah, he could pick that off, but he did. But he did do it. And
yeah,
he impeded the that was a good ball. He would have had a touchdown if he would have caught it. And that's what the DB said, by the way.
He don't know.
How would you feel if you got your house robbed and the police were there?
There's intent.
And they didn't stop him. It's like, what do you mean? Why didn't you stop this guy?
No call, complicity.
No call, complicity. I don't know.
For the wrongdoing.
That's not bad. Because it is their job to stop a crime from happening. But if the police are like, well, we didn't think he was going to do it. We thought he was here to clean the house or whatever.
Try to get some of them snacks.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just honest to goodness, and I love Drew Brees. Think he's the Walter Payton of this era. Sean Payton, to me, I've lost some respect for.
Oh, here. My.
He's a bit of a
echoing his wrongs, for talking about.
His ego's out of control, Marcelo.
What does that have to do with the fact
that
he?
That's why I've lost respect for him. His ego's out of control.
But you're using this to kind of galvanize that point and say, oh, because you're complaining about a wrong, you're a sore loser, so now your ego's out of control? I don't see the connection.
He's not taking responsibility for what he did to cost them that game.
And you know what? If this was during the regular season, I would agree with you. I would say, get on it. You got next week. But there is no tomorrow here. That's why it feels like a death. You'll never have this opportunity again, and it's gone forever. Yeah. And you know how hard it is to get to these situations.
Right.
It's extremely hard. So, yes, he's grieving right now. Is there? And like I said, I compared it to a death. Is there a proper way to grieve? Are you going to tell somebody, you can't grieve that way? They're grieving right now. It feels that way, like somebody died.
Because this is why this is how I would like for him to grieve. You know what? The refs made a mistake, and I made about six that cost us this game. And so you can blame the ref, but don't forget to blame me, because I really did some dumb stuff here that helped cost us the game.
And there was so much football left after that play. And that, to me, is what I think is getting overlooked. There's so many plays where they could have done the right thing and overcome this call. It's not like that play was the only one that could have ended the game.
I'm never going to a wake with either one of y'all. I mean, you sit there just looking. Look, wipe your tears.
Look, he gone. I'll give you the great analogy. What? If today I leave here and go to a buffet and choke on a buffalo wing and die, don't blame the restaurant.
Shut up. Don't that is not analogous. What the hell?
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, options, ETFs, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. They provide a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. It's simple and intuitive, with a clear design of data presented in an easy-to-digest way. What are the values of the Robinhood app, you may ask? The design and ease of use. It has easy to understand charts and market data, so you can place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood's web platform also lets you view stock collections and analyst ratings of buy, hold, and sell for every stock. Also, you can learn by doing. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with your personalized news feed. You can even set custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at speak.robinhood.com. That's speak, S-P-E-A-K, dot Robinhood.com.
All right, welcome back with Lock and Wiley. Eric Mangini is back. We're joined now by former Pro Bowler Sean Merriman. Time for a big story. Sponsored by Volvo and the all-new S60, follow no one. Let's move to the Patriots, who have clawed their way back to the Super Bowl for the ninth time in the Brady Belichick era. It's almost hard to believe, but a year ago, the story coming out of Foxborough was one of discord between the two leaders of the NFL's greatest dynasty. But this week, both Belichick and Brady denied there was anything to those reports.
Some of these people, I don't know who they are. I've never met them, never talked to them, so I mean, I'm not going to get a bunch of, you know, gossip.
You know, we've always gotten along great. You know, we've worked together for 19 years. So I've had the same goals in mind for 19 years. And, you know, he's been just a great, great mentor in my life, a great coach. He's taught me, you know, more than, you know, anyone ever could about the game of football. And, you know, I've always just loved playing here and playing for him. He's the greatest coach of all time. And we just had some incredible moments together.
19 years in the same relationship, and there was never a rift. There was never a problem. There was never an argument. There was nothing. It was just all gossip and rumors. These guys sang Kumbaya every night by a campfire. I don't buy it.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Go ahead.
Look, 19 years, it's very mature what they're doing and saying.
Mm-hmm.
But in 19 years, of course, there was a bit of a rift. But like two grown adults, they eventually saw, hey, we're better together. And you know what? I really do love you. And we got over. Let's get over this Malcolm Butler deal, and let's go out here and try to win another Super Bowl. I give them great hat tip. Adults, instead of growing apart, the rift probably brought them back together and made them even stronger. That's what makes them great. They're mature and keep their eyes on the bigger picture over the long haul. But any relationship of 19 years gonna have a rift or two.
You gave him the Whitlock Fedora hat tip.
The full hat tip.
You might really feel that way. I hate to go through semantics, but real rift versus arguments, fights, disagreements. Are they the same? Are they synonymous or are they really different? I take real Riff to the point where these guys both have individual power and collective greater power. Real Riff means to me that they try to execute and actualize our disagreement. That means I'm going to Bob Kraft, Belichick, you're going to Bob Kraft, we're trying to divorce each other. Like literally, like through action. Like that's Real Riff. I've been on Real Riff. I've been Doug Flutie, Rob Johnson. I've seen Real Riff. I've seen our owner tell Wade Phillips one thing and the next day tell him something else to the tune of we lost the game because of that, and that's Real Riff. I seen A.J. Smith not talk to Marty Schottenheimer after he won 14 games, walking down that walkway like this, not even speaking. Yeah. That's Real Riff. Like, we gonna make something happen out of that. That's not Real Riff. 19 years, and we, you know, we've been at it 6 months, and already a couple times you looked at me, and I was like, all right, dog. And that's love, and that's really the ingredients of a great relationship. So, hate to go semantics, but to me, not a Real Riff. Because they didn't really make something of it, and they both could have.
I don't agree with it, but that's good. Very good.
I agree with Marcellus. I think whenever you're with someone for a long time, it's not going to be all roses and walks on the beaches. But there's a difference between having a disagreement, being frustrated with someone, and having something that's going to tear you apart. I mean, they lost the Super Bowl, Jimmy Garoppolo, all those different things that come up. But they both understand that they're good for each other. They both understand that they wouldn't be in the place that they're in without each other. And just like with any relationship, there's certain characteristics of your partner that may get on your nerves after time, but you respect the great things about it, and you move forward understanding that you each help each other achieve your goals.
I believe wherever there's smoke, there's fire, period. I don't believe that anyone will make up some of the things that was coming out. First of all, they keep their organization so tight. So anything to come out of it, it has to be something, right? Really? When Jimmy G was up and he was supposed to, you know, going to stay there with the organization or leave somewhere else, Bill Belichick wanted him there. That's a fact. People knew that. Mm. Whether Tom Brady was going to come back or they were going to decide to keep Jimmy, that's a fact. That if you want to call that Riff, that's Real Riff. I do believe Bill Belichick one thing. I do believe that he didn't speak to any one of those reporters or say anything negative or brought anything himself. But when I say there's smoke, there's fire, I believe that players have seen what happened, heard what happened in the locker room. They've seen it firsthand. One thing, these players have wives. These wives have friends. Hmm. These friends have cousins. Their cousins have friends. So it's out there. I believe when there's smoke, there's fire, there had to have been something over these years that it had to come from. You just don't make up things like this.
Yeah, you do.
No, it's
You've been there before, lights out.
Yeah, but not from this organization. Because they're wrapped so tight, they don't let anything get out.
Hold on. Respect to Seth Wickersham and his report. And the fact that you went to sources, not the source, strike one. Maybe even strike one and two. Because as you're going to these anonymous teammates, as soon as you can go to Tom Brady and hear, no, I'm not speaking to you. Then you go to Bill Belichick, I'm not speaking to you. Guess what? You don't have the pure uncut dope. You don't have it like you think you have it. So now you're getting into pillow talk. You're getting into guys who maybe have different motivations, guys who are not in those intense moments and seeing it from afar. Everyone's vantage points is starting to add up to a place where you're like, I got the complete picture. Instead of talking to the sources.
But so you tell me when Alex Guerrero, when that problem happened, when he was too in the organization, he made himself too comfortable, that wasn't a problem, that was just made up?
Oh, yeah, but Alex Guerrero doesn't mean that now Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are going to have a real riff. We can have a disagreement. You gave him access. Now you want to rein it back? Okay, we got a disagreement on his access. But real riff, like, what kind of world we live in that we're so sensitive that I can't say yes and no to you, and also we got a problem when I say no to you.
Okay, Marcellus, and all you. This is the single side of the room, the married side of the room over here. When your partner says, I think in his own documentary that he was doing over Facebook, wasn't he the one saying that he didn't feel appreciated? Mm-hmm. Wasn't he the one who's like, basically saying Bill Belichick gives him no love? When your partner comes to you and starts talking about, I don't feel appreciated, I don't care. That's a problem.
Okay.
That will lead to some counseling. If that's not addressed, there's a big problem.
The first thing I heard on record, Tom Brady not feeling appreciated, was years before this article and years before this real riff. It was when he took his parking spot back. It was like 5-6 years ago. Tom Brady had his own parking spot. Tom Brady deserves his own parking spot. I don't know what time he gets there. Probably first. What time he leaves? Probably last. But Tom Brady deserves his own parking spot. And then they took it back. Now, there wasn't a real riff conversation or real riff article written about that, but that's part of the fuel for this call, real riff fire. Now we all of a sudden have all these people talking about their situation when really all it was a power play. Don Yee represented three of the four parties involved. Jimmy G, he represented Tom Brady, Bob Kraft in a loose fashion. And then there's Bill Belichick who's feeling isolated like, yo, y'all all consulting about me. And then that's all that was exaggerated. If it was a real riff, why didn't they just really beef it out to the point where they're not together?
Because they've grown.
But look, if you're in New England, you can't be sensitive. That's just the way it is. You can't be sensitive and be there. And Tom Brady, one of the great things about him is as much success and fame and all the things that he's had, he's still coachable. He still appreciates the role that he has. And that role allows him to be a leader to everybody else who's in there. And with any relationship, yeah, are you going to get into arguments? You are. And are you going to have to give and take a little bit? You are. But at the end of the day, when you understand that this person is what's best for you, you move on from it and you go to the next thing in line.
They certainly have, and I can't criticize either one of them. Mm. After that,
that's why you're single still. You don't know what a real riff is. Oh, we have a disagreement. It's over, girl.
It's a riff. It's a riff.
It's a riff. Keep plowing.
Let me tell you one of my greatest philosophies in life. I don't believe in compromise. I'm not meeting anybody halfway to stupidity. Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by NBA insider Chris Haynes. Let's move to the NBA, where Carmelo Anthony is finally on the move, being traded from Houston to Chicago. The trade is just a money dump. Melo won't actually play for the Bulls, but he could still end up with his good friend LeBron James, with a report surfacing that the Lakers are still interested in finding a way to acquire the former All-Star. Who likes this? Does Carmelo Anthony? It didn't work out with Chris Paul, his best friend there. Why would it work out with the Lakers and LeBron James? Carmelo makes no sense. With the Lakers.
It makes a ton of sense. Whatever you want to say about Carmelo Anthony, and a lot of people want to point to his last 2 years of production and decline, to really just say that's who he is in totality. A lot of movement, a lot of moving parts with Carmelo Anthony. I still think he's a very good player in this league and very good for the Lakers situation for two reasons. One, he is a veteran. And that's a young core. And LeBron James, at his age, is looking for guys who are ready right now. And two, if you look at him from the three-point line, which is today's game, Carmelo Anthony on this team would rank top three in terms of shooting in his decline. Like, the decline years, the 35-36% shooter right now will be right behind the best three-point shooter on the Lakers, which is by percentage. Anybody? Fun fact, trivia.
Josh Hart.
Lance Stevenson. Oh, hello. I mean, what? So Carmelo Anthony, because of his versatility, I'm not going to use all the decline and just say that's who he is in totality. I think he can really help this team, especially in the veteran mindset.
Look, I have to agree with Whitlock on this one.
Smoke.
He was in Houston. He was on a team where all he had to do was play a minimal role. And it didn't work out. It lasted, a couple weeks before it was let go? So now you're asking him to come on to a Los Angeles Lakers squad. If you take LeBron James out, this team is young.
Yeah.
Is Carmelo in the mindset right now that I could come in and be a veteran leader, just help these young guys? Or is his mindset is I can still score and give buckets? Because if that's his mindset, that's the mindset that got him out of Houston. And the Lakers right now, that's not what they need. And I know LeBron James, like, the Lakers interested, is it Lakers or is it LeBron that's interested in Carmelo? Because we know LeBron wants him over. I just don't think that's a good fit overall.
That's messed up. This is messed up. Houston and OKC, if you talk about Carmelo Anthony fitting in, what's in common in those two destinations? The leader of both franchises, not the same facilitator and open-minded leader as a LeBron James. Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Look at James Harden right now, who I love, who I respect. Hmm. But as soon as Chris Paul go down, what does James Harden do? Hey. Goes back to what he really wants to do, what he's been suppressing, which is take over. Russell Westbrook playing well with Paul George. We understand that. But it's a difficult process. Carmelo has taken a lot of the blame from dealing with two of the superstars who don't necessarily like to share. Put him in there with LeBron
James. Don't like to share? Say what you will about James and Russ. But they're one of the league leaders in assists every year.
After they get their bucket.
And when LeBron comes back.
You fell for the okie doke. I understand that.
They want to get their numbers. I do get
that. Okay, all right.
I do get that. But you're bringing Carmelo on. Who are you taking minutes away from?
I think your bigger problem is and Chris, do you remember Allen Iverson in Denver?
Mm-hmm.
And he still thought he
Carmelo,
was
yep.
Allen Iverson mm-hmm. from Philadelphia.
Right.
And that's the problem with Carmelo. Carmelo is a sober Allen Iverson. That's all he is. Mm. He still thinks he's the guy that won the national championship at Syracuse. He still thinks he's a perennial all-star and, a number one, number two player. He's not of the mindset. He still thinks he's one of the 10 best players in the league. And Allen Iverson, no. to this day, probably still thinks he can go out in the NBA and get 40. This is a sober Allen Iverson. It just won't work.
Man, well, y'all leave that boy alone, man.
Hey, he's going. I'm saying if he thinks, if that's his mindset, it won't work in Los Angeles. I don't know that that's the case.
Yeah.
I don't know if he really thinks he's still a top 10 player. He's a good player. He should be in this league.
Thank you.
But as of right now, at this stage of his career, it's all about fit.
On an eighth seed, he can't help it.
So the Warriors.
Wow.
Who have come on strong lately, winning 9 of their last 10 to regain control of the West. Earlier this season, it looked like things might be falling apart in Golden State with Draymond Green getting suspended by the team after an on-court spat with Kevin Durant. But as Marcus Thompson writes in The Athletic, Draymond and Durant have made up, with KD asking Green to rein in his emotions. Quote, Durant's seen Green control it. He's seen him keep his composure in the crucible of championship stakes. He's seen him locked in and focused, forcing his emotions to submit to his will. So Durant challenged him to be better. Green accepted. All right. Is this a good sign for the Golden State Warriors in terms of long-term keeping Kevin Durant? I say it has no impact there. I think Kevin Durant is trying to get through this season, and he's going to do whatever the hell it is he wants to do when the offseason comes around.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think a lot of times, especially in NBA free agency, we look for any little scrap, any little kernel and say, that means something. Oh, he has a home here in the offseason. Yeah, he got a home in about 5 cities if you really want to know. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going there with this. I'm not putting too much on this. For a guy like myself, no shame. I was engaged 4 different times. And every single one of those, we went through counseling. And we really tried to work it out.
And it was always them. It was always them. They were the problem.
Well, I found that out in counseling. before I thought it was all me. Then I found out it was you. So, but the point is, you will move on and still say, all right, well, I tried. And I think that this is what KD is doing. He's like, I tried. Like, I'm trying to fix the situation. Doesn't mean I'm married to it. So I wouldn't put too much on this.
I think what's going on is that incident happened so early in the season that at some point they had to talk about it and try to move on past it. I actually got KD a few days after that incident on my podcast to post it up with Chris Haynes podcast.
We heard about that big time.
Do it with my boy Mark Haynes and Terrence Hall. But he said that he let that go immediately. I don't know where I believe him from that standpoint. But look, I agree with – I don't think this is going to have any bearing on his future or anything like that. It's a situation where it's a long season. I got to play with you. I got to see you every day.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to discuss this and move on. Now, was the Warriors, are they concerned? Are they still concerned to this day? Yes, I think so. Was that incident, did that have play a big part in their concern? Yes, it did. Yeah. Will it play a part in the summer? I'm not so sure.
It was smart of KD to do it this way, too, because – one, you address a younger player or a less accomplished player and him, and you don't sun him. You just say, look, man, I think you got more in you if you hone this in and really start to be a well-rounded player instead of just always being emotionally driven. But two, like you said, it's really awkward to be on a team, travel, everything with a guy, and you're trying to ignore him. Because my grandma used to say, to ignore is to pay attention. You ever try to ignore somebody? You got to pay more attention to them. Oh, here they come. Oh, no, I can't look that way. Oh, no. I ain't messing with them. We ain't cool. You paying more attention to this dude than I'm right in front of you. So
I'm going to tell you the other thing here, though. I think it's smart by Draymond to accept this criticism and try to change because he still would like to get paid again from Golden State.
Mm.
And he can't be seen as the reason KD left. That would cost him money and credibility.
That's a good business decision.
Right.
Make sure you go and appease this guy. Because he was the big reason why he got him there. But you don't want to be the reason why you made him vote. Yeah,
and you think about it, like Draymond Green, he's an interesting case study. his numbers don't support max dollars or even anything in that respect. However, him in this circumstance does suggest that you need that Swiss Army knife for what they do. If he gets himself in his position where they lose the love for him in the organization, I don't know where else he can go and command that same dollar based on these numbers and the perceived effect he'll have on another franchise.
You know what's not smart? Job boards that send you candidates that aren't qualified for the role you posted or send you a mile-high stack of resumes to sort through. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/speak to hire the right person. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, and actively invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, Speak for Yourself listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/speak. If you love this show, show your support to it and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/SPEAK. That's ZipRecruiter.com/speak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hit him, hit him. Whitlock and Wiley, John Merriman and Chris Haynes are back. My favorite segment. Time to get antisocial. First, I want to give a hat tip to Chris. He got that silly part out of his hair, Marcel.
Oh, you talking about that part?
He took you off that part. Man, I can't get into the show well, man.
Hey, Chris, you want that part again? Nah, that's not it.
Anyway, Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here to walk us through the Twitter streets. Darnell, what's cracking?
Yeah, man, let's start with Florida State University, where the football program apologized after receiving social media backlash when they tweeted an edited picture of Martin Luther King Jr. wearing a football glove and apparently due to the tomahawk chop. The tweet was deleted about an hour after it was posted, but Myra Metcalf took a screenshot and posted it on his Twitter asking the question, how does this happen? Y'all think people are overreacting to this?
I do, just because he says so right here. For the people who didn't see this, let me remind you of something that happened over Twitter for 30 minutes that you didn't see. And should you be offended or what? It's a mistake. Some kid was trying, the motivation was trying to honor Dr. King, and the kid screwed it up and they corrected it. I don't understand how this ended up on the front page of ESPN.com. This is not big news. This is not big news.
Dog.
People make mistakes, Marcel.
I mean, I'm not dead to know what my legacy is going to be, if I have one, outside my family, but I don't think there's anything you could do that is going to make me feel like I want to wake up from the grave. How dare you? Like, just when I saw it, I was like, I hope he explained why I should be mad, because maybe I will be mad, but if you don't explain it, I'm not mad off of just image. Imagery right there. Like, I know what you're doing. Like, Martin Luther King, what he stood for, obviously is not this scope, but is it a violation to put him in this lane? Y'all tell me, but I'm not.
I feel like it is. I feel like it is. To me, it's just as bad as when you ever see the flyer of people selling doing a nightclub and they got Martin Luther King on the front of a nightclub, you know, like doing something. To me,
I never seen that.
You never seen it?
I heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
But to me, it's the same thing. You're trying to promote something on his day and what you're trying to promote him and use the university. You're trying to promote something.
Yeah, now you got me. Okay.
You know, so that's why I have a problem with it, because you're trying to get something out of it. You're not promoting him. You're not celebrating him. You're trying to get something out of it. So that's my problem with it.
And Martin Luther King Day, it's not like it snuck up on anybody. We knew this day was coming. So you have time to plan, strategically plan how you're going to honor him. Yeah. That's much of people should have looked at that and approved
okay,
it.
Okay, so if it's February 4th and they do this, y'all got a problem with it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not just King Day, it's just...
Well, you're just promoting Martin Luther King and trying to get something from that. You get what I'm saying? It's not just promoting him.
And he's a Morehouse alum. Those are proud students over there, man. Don't play with me.
I think it's a bad attempt at trying to get young people to relate to Martin Luther King. How can I put something out there that gets them to think about Martin Luther King? It's a bad attempt. But again, they removed it almost instantly. I just don't understand why this is front page news on ESPN.com to hold this little
shots,
moment.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
Yeah, I hear what you're doing. Like, we know it could be out there on any site. ESPN.com.
Worldwide leader.
Distasteful, but does that mean it's wrong? Yeah. I mean, I'm a little looser with my.
I didn't catch it the first time. What?
All right, go ahead. Oh, no, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to some big NFL news. With Chiefs fans rejoicing with the news that defensive coordinator Bob Sutton has been relieved of his duties, Twitter celebrated the Chiefs' decision, with most people saying this should have happened a long time ago. Adam Schefter floated Rex Ryan's name out there as a possible replacement. Ryan has been approached about other DC positions in the past few seasons, but do you guys think Rex would fix all the Chiefs' problems?
Do I think Rex will fix all the Chiefs' problems? I think it'll be an upgrade over Bob Sutton. I think I would be an upgrade over Bob Sutton.
Yeah, man. We went through this ad nauseum yesterday, and I ain't want to get somebody fired, but it part.
Your fault, Marcellus.
I was right. You'd have made the call.
And he hit me after the show. He was like, hey, bro, thank you. I got you. Like, I'm going to run with this. Like, how you going to be first in pass rushing and sacks and then 31st in defense? Like, I've never been on a team where I've seen that actually work together. So, yeah, Bob Sutton, your scheme, old, antiquated, got to go.
Yeah, because they couldn't tackle.
Yeah.
You know, to me, when a defense can't tackle, that's the mentality that you instill in your whole entire defense. That's coming from the top. That's the defensive coordinator. Mm. They ain't tackling nobody. And I argue with Brian Cox about this. He was like, oh, you know, I played for Bob Sutton. I know. I said, man, let me tell you something. When you get old, it's time to go. Like, the game has changed. Your philosophies might be different. Your attitude might be different towards the game. And this time has passed. I don't care how great he was in the past. He's just not good now.
Bob Sutton is not Dick LeBeau. Let's, you know, so what I'm saying, I'm making your point, is like Dick LeBeau is a special case, an old coach that can still get it done. This is an old dude that needs to go. All right, Darnell, what's next?
No. He's like, all right.
That'd be $8.
I'll stay in my lane.
Man. All right, on to my favorite clip on Twitter. The 76ers beat the Rockets yesterday in a 121-93 blowout. But even more impressive was this big-time dance-off between these two kids. Mm. They're really going at it, hitting all the dance moves from Fortnite.
Oh.
I tried picking a winner, but it was too hard to really choose one. They both was killing it.
You got
to
hurry up and dance. Okay. He got out of it. He got out of it. Look at his eyes looking up at him. Yeah, that's me.
Marcellus, I've been out with you before. I know you like to attempt to do a few moves.
Yeah.
Who won the battle between you and Whitlock?
What'd you say? Who
win a battle between you and Whitlock?
I quit dancing at this age, so I know Marcellus would win.
Score him. Look, you got a chance in like chair dancing, you know, seat dancing. I'm Big Usher, dog, for a reason. Like, Big Usher can move, bro.
Hey, Marcellus is aggressive on the dance floor. If he about to dance, get out. He knocking stuff over, pushing the chair on the ground.
Oh, I love it, man. Yeah, the dude who finally got out of his shirt won, but it was a great contest.
See, they got to stop this, right? Because you missed when they were showing this, like two or three kids next to him was also taking their shirt off. So you gotta stop this at some point, because if that becomes a thing, you got a real problem on your hands.
Good point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just had a daughter too. She better not get involved in that. What the hell?
Your only job, man. Keep her off the dance floor.
I got one job.
You gotta keep her at the clubs and the arenas.
And the arena and the game.
And look out for the boys at the game.
Nowhere.
They come up to say hi with their shirts off. What am I gonna do?
So doing timeouts, keep your eyes closed.
All right. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to a guy who went viral last week on Twitter, Kalen Saunders, a.k.a. the 320-pound backflip guy from Western Illinois and the NFL draft prospect.
Ooh.
Saunders found out that his pregnant fiancée was going into labor while he was at the Senior Bowl and decided to stay in Alabama while his fiancée delivers their baby in Chicago. Some people online criticized the 22-year-old for not being at the birth of his child, while others pointed out he is doing something that could help provide for his family better later on. What would y'all do if this were you?
What his wife told
him. What exactly?
Right. And his wife told him, stay your ass there.
Go make
that. Exactly.
Yeah, right. Might have other kids. We're going to have more kids, right? Good.
Exactly.
I can do this once in a lifetime thing, and that we're going to do some more of. So, if you know what? It's a tough decision, but you got to go with it.
Yeah, if you could jump around, you better stay right there. Jump one round, stay over there, no problem. Yeah,
I'll say this. I wouldn't have been able to get away with it, but. Mm. Teach his own. It's all
but that's what FaceTime is for.
You wouldn't have been able to get away?
I don't think so. I do not think so.
Hurt your pro chances versus?
I don't think so, bro.
Yeah, if you slip to the third round and those checks stop coming in.
I understand. Hey, man.
See, he's taking all the heat. I guarantee you his girl is the one who was like.
Well, she got to come speak out there, Jay. She got to speak on his behalf. She got to let it be known.
Him being there is enough. That means he has her support.
Exactly. Right?
You think.
Man, you can't FaceTime the Senior Bowl. You can't be like, look, if I were there, I'd be doing this.
Right.
But you can FaceTime that birth. I just had one. All right, baby, I saw her.
All right, that's cool. I'm telling you that. They all ain't that accommodating, I'll tell you that.
All right, thanks, Darnell. I'm Jason Whitlock. He is Marcellus Wiley. It's time to put on our thinking caps. Eric Mangini and Sean Merriman are back. As you know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Columbia's very own Marcellus Wiley. So we're going to talk about a big issue in sports on a much deeper intellectual level.
Yes, we are.
For our Columbia grad, we have a special cap. Darnell, bring it out.
Uh-huh.
You guys have to put up with this.
Ooh, biscuit.
Eric, you went to Wesleyan. It's probably a pretty smart school. Got a Maryland grad here.
Belichick.
I'm from Ball State. Mm. I socialized very well when I was in college. All right.
We bet.
Let's return to the NFL, where the Patriots once again proved to be greater than the sum of their parts, with Brady leading another unheralded unit to a huge road win over my Kansas City Chiefs. And back to the Super Bowl for the third year in a row before the game, Brady said he felt like everyone doubted the Patriots. And right after the win, he vented about all the criticism to receiver Chris Hogan.
I'm too old. You're too slow. We got no skill players. We got no defense. We got nothing.
Hogan is just one of Brady's many unheralded skills players, the most notable being Julian Edelman, who has turned into the most productive postseason receiver in the NFL since joining forces with Brady. I'm watching the game Sunday night, and Julian Edelman crushed the Kansas City Chiefs. And it just popped into my head. I was like, Julian Edelman's more valuable than all the diva receivers that get all the attention. This guy's out here killing it, putting together a Hall of Fame resume, helping the Patriots go back to the Super Bowl for the ninth time. Julian Edelman is more valuable than Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., and all the other diva receivers wrapped together.
Man, you're going to make me take shots at Julian Edelman. And that's not even right. No, I'm with you, because when they said it during the broadcast, he's putting together a Hall of Fame candidacy, I was like, yeah, because he's clutch. And that's amazing. But we have to dive into the details to also highlight why Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham were more valuable. One, before you even get to this postseason, you got to ball out 0-16, as they call it. So you got to get your regular season games up to even get in that conversation. And that's where Julian Edelman, one, loses the conversation to Antonio Brown and to Odell Beckham Jr. Just to the numbers, Odell has only been in the league, 5 years? Before those five, he had 1,000-plus yards. Only once he missed it, and that was because of injury.
Empty calories. Go ahead.
Oh, wow. Go ahead. Ooh, okay, well, go Hall ahead. Of Fame, you know.
Empty
you,
calories.
You're going to count the two games in the postseason, maybe three, versus the 16 regular. Okay, that's your grading scale. Edelman and Antonio Brown been in the league the same amount of years. Ooh, don't look at it. Two 1,000-yard seasons for Edelman versus seven without it. And Antonio has just the opposite, seven with it and two without it. There's no comparison in terms of, like, just what they can do out there. There's not a comparison. Now, if you put them all in the same situation structure and lessen the assets around them, then you're going to have a conversation. But here's my real thing. As we just watched the Hall of Famer in T.O., who put up the second best numbers in NFL history, get slighted because of off-the-field issues, I'm going to slight Julian Edelman for on-the-field issues. I'm not even going to go into his Snapchat. Y'all go into his Snapchat if y'all know what I'm talking about. I'm going to go into the fact you got suspended for PEDs. Now, where I'm from, the athlete I am who never touched him, anybody who did it, and one of my best friends in the game, Rodney Harrison, did it. Sean Merriman got caught. I love y'all as people. But as a player, man, we don't even count you. You are beyond discounted. You're discarded because if you had to go and cheat to go get there, man versus machine, I'm going to bet on the machine. You are on that thing. Once you do that, you're discarded in this conversation in comparison to other guys who haven't been affected by that.
And you know, I do agree with you in certain parts about that because – you know, I've also got asked a few times, like, what do I feel about going forward? You got some of the baseball players who up, and I had to comment on it. So I do feel about that at a certain point. But I'm going to a whole point of none of these diva guys can even play on this team in the first place. They can never play on this systematic offensive scheme program New England Patriots team in the first place. They can never go on the field. They're too much about give me the damn ball. In this scheme, you can't have a give me the damn ball attitude because this ain't the type of scheme. The last person that played in that scheme that you knew you had to throw the ball to, you knew you had to give him the ball with, was Randy Moss.
Yeah,
that was it. But that's so rare for that to even happen that it'll never happen again because you have to spread the ball around too much of these guys. That's what makes them so unpredictable on what they're going to do on the offense side of the ball. I can go back to even Wes Welker. Hmm. Wes Welker ate us alive when we played them. He found a way. He was Julian Edelman before Julian Edelman even was really talked about.
Exactly.
Wes Welker was the man. He leaves and go to Denver. I know he had a concussion, some injury problems or whatnot, but you didn't hear about him again. I can't put him up in that category only because he has too much help. One being Tom Brady, the other one being Bill Belichick. You go to another team and you produce the same way, then we can have these talks. If you can't do that, then I can't talk about it. Hmm.
Yeah, Julian Edelman is a fit in this system. He's productive in this system, just like Wes Welker was productive in this system. And before him, Troy Brown was productive in this system. Now, Antonio Brown is a different category because he's uniquely talented. And even when you double team him, he can find ways to get open. But if you look at their whole body of work and all the things they bring, you've got to look at how much you have to pay in Antonio Brown versus Edelman. You have to look at the distractions that each guy brings to the table in the offseason, during the regular season, all those other problems. And you know, how do you weigh those things? If we're just going to look at sheer ability, then Antonio Brown would have the nod without a doubt. When you look at the system fit and how productive he is in this for this team, it's no comparison.
If I, Marcellus, you've made a point that as someone, you know, obviously clearly wasn't even close to being a pro player, but never used PEDs, but I never had a problem with guys that did. I really didn't. It didn't bother me, no.
Why?
Because people do, generally speaking, whatever it is necessary to compete. Mm-hmm. Whatever it takes to compete, people are going to do, and you can't stop them. And again, it's not that I think using steroids is okay, but it's like I looked at it like, oh, that's what that dude's got to do to compete, huh?
Well, it's not necessarily as players. You also have to understand it's the committee who vote on it. That it's not just the players. You have some players. You have some guys that do it and don't even get caught for a long period of time. You got some guys like me who made a mistake. I believe in his case, and when he presented it to the league, he made a mistake. So does it, but you get suspended. That's what it is. But if you're – and I always say it, if I was in that position – and I wouldn't get in because of that reason, I wouldn't be totally upset because I understand that you got a bunch of guys that have long careers, never been in trouble, never, for that anyway, and never had any off-the-field issues, none of this stuff. I understand it. I get it. But I don't necessarily think that that's going to be the determining factor for him, at least, because he's had a long enough career where he's been productive, you know, and not just something short and happened and went away.
And I want to move back to valuable. And so, to me, if I'm an NFL owner, executive, or head coach, I want to get to where Belichick and the Patriots are. 9 Super Bowls in 18 years. 5 Super Bowl rings. That kind of consistency. And so, if I'm a owner, executive, or coach, I'm like, how can I find me a Julian Edelman, and how can someone who will adhere to the system that I want to use to win, he's reliable, I don't have to worry about whether he's going to be at the practice before a must-win game, I don't have to worry about is he going to get to the spot where my quarterback expects him to, he's not going to be Facebook live and inside my locker room, right. He's not going to be a distraction. This is a guy that I can win with. And since 2009, 105 postseason receptions. The second place is Wes Welker with 61. Third is Julio Jones. You don't get to Antonio Brown until like 9th or 10th. Odell Beckham's not. These guys aren't as reliable as Julian Edelman. And availability and reliability are talents that are highly valuable.
I mean, look, when you're a Patriot, as Edelman is, he has 6 more games in the postseason than Brown and Beckham combined. So guess what? You're going to have more opportunities to get those numbers up. But per game averages, he doesn't beat Antonio Brown. So, you know, if Antonio Brown had more opportunities, then his numbers would trump Edelman. The thing about it is you can't replicate what the Patriots are doing. Like, they even Mr. Magoo themselves to this position. They didn't know what they were getting in Belichick in terms of this level of greatness. They thought they were getting a damn good coach and an amazing defensive coordinator who had his struggles in Cleveland, 36-44 record. And then when he got to New England, he was 5-13 before Tom Brady stepped on that field. Now, everyone always says, oh, who is it, Belichick or Brady? I can't isolate the variables except saying one. Belichick had opportunities before Brady, but none since Brady. 5-13, then Brady hit the field that year. They won 11 games and won the Super Bowl.
You could argue the individuals. I'm talking reliability, consistency, availability, the lack of distraction. You take those values anywhere in sports, anywhere in TV, anywhere in life, and they work. And Julian Edelman adheres to those values, and that makes him more valuable than guys that don't.
And when you look at Odell or Antonio and you say, well, they haven't had as many opportunities in the postseason, if they were more reliable, if they were more consistent, would those teams have been in the postseason more? You know, is it chicken or egg in terms of their production?
What about Eli Manning? Anybody?
Well, again, he might perform better if he was in a better, more reliable.
Oh, so you give him Edelman, Eli's better.
If I give him the culture and the adherence to reliability and consistency, yeah, Eli's better. Eric Mangini and Sean Merriman are back. Let's move to Philadelphia, where despite another late-season surge led by Nick Foles, the Eagles have made it clear that Carson Wentz is their starting quarterback. But yesterday, a report surfaced that the locker room isn't fully behind Wentz, who was called selfish and egotistical by anonymous sources. Some of Wentz's teammates jumped to his defense, with Lane Johnson tweeting, quote, "Whoever wrote that article needs to check their sources. Fake news. Carson has been and is our leader and our quarterback. Y'all know where to find me if you have any issues." With Zach Ertz adding, "Don't believe everything you read. Carson has been nothing but a great person, a great teammate, and a great leader since day one. Our locker room stands behind him all the way. We can't wait to get back to work and be the best team we can be in 2019. Question is, should Carson Wentz be worried about this? And I would say, yeah, a little bit, because I think there's some truth to it, but I think it's natural. I think I read the entire article. Guys are upset. He threw the ball to Zach Ertz too much. There's a couple of wide receivers, Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Aguilar, that maybe have a little problem. He targets Zach Ertz. I think this is the proper pushback against Carson Wentz to try to point him in the direction. You know why we play better with Nick Foles? Because he does X, Y, and Z. You need to do a little more of this.
As I said earlier, I don't trust articles that talk to the sources, not the source. Strike one. Strike two is this one, this whole narrative of all the teammates coming out saying, yeah, man, you targeted Zach Ertz more than Nick Foles did. Did y'all watch the games? I did. Here's some facts. Percent of targets looks kind of comparable to me, if not the same. Look at that. Carson Wentz and Nick Foles basically said, hey, Zach Ertz, you're open. I throw you the ball the same rate. A lot of people want to exaggerate that, maybe because of their friendship. You know how that goes. I've been on too many disgruntled teams, man. I've been through civil wars where cats didn't even speak to each other. And I'm like, narratives start to run in different places in parts because the camps are separated. Oh, I support this player, or you support him. Now we're not having communication. The article was well-written, but I just don't buy it. I buy that there are a lot of disgruntled individuals who tried to map on what they felt to this situation, and it got taken out of context.
I struggle with the term well-respected anonymous sources, because I think if you're well-respected in a locker room, if you really are, then you're going to take a young player and you're going to take him out to dinner, or you're going to take him somewhere privately, and you're going to say, hey, these things are coming up. I want to make you aware of it so that you can adjust. And that's what well-respected teammates do. You know, they don't go and say that there's all this strife. The other thing is, for as many players to come out as publicly as they did in support of him, usually if guys feel a certain way, they won't say anything at all. These guys were proactive in coming out and saying, this is not the case. If you're boys with someone, but you may feel that it is true, that typically those guys say nothing as opposed to come out and be positive.
Wisdom. Whenever I see anonymous source, the first thing I think of is coward. period. Mm. You know, these are guys that have a personal vendetta against somebody or don't like a person in the locker room for whatever reason. This could be a guy that's on the way out the door.
Yeah.
You know, could be leaving because Carson Wentz didn't throw in the ball or Carson Wentz didn't do something for him or didn't help him stay, you know, with the team organization. We don't know who this anonymous source is, but let me tell you, this anonymous source is not anonymous for long if somebody really said that, because they might not come out to the media. It might be off the record, but the guys upstairs, they're going to find out who's spreading these bad things around the locker room, and that person's going to be gone if not already.
I think it's crystal clear that there's a segment of the Eagles locker room that loves Nick Foles.
Yes.
They put up a little shrine in the locker room and all that other stuff.
Yep.
And so there's a segment of that locker room that loves his leadership and his approach, and they're trying to push Carson Wentz that direction. Not doing it in the best way possible. They're young people. They're inexperienced with the media. But that's all this is to me. And I think Carson Wentz will be better for this. Not all fake news stories or not all anonymous source stories are a bad thing or lead to bad ramifications. There will be a conversation between Carson Wentz and some of his teammates this offseason.
Yeah, he could grow from it. Yeah. But, Carson Wentz didn't buy you a shotgun for Christmas like he did everybody else. Like, he bought everybody shotguns. Y'all better be careful talking about this boy without owning up to it.
Right.
Just be careful. It's the rare occasion when these type of stories are bullseye. I always read them with a grain of salt.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Saints coach Sean Payton.
Oh, man. What'd it be?
What'd
it be like?
You a bee catcher, huh?
Say what?
What'd it be like?
You a bee catcher.
Yeah, it's real funny, man.
It's funny over here. I ain't getting stung.
Everybody got jokes, right? But wait a minute. Hey, but guess who's going to find out where the bees are when they get back to their locker room, till they get back to the dressing room?
Who that? I got an oatmeal raisin up in his pocket.
All right. Let's take a look at a highlight from our discussion earlier in the show about Sean Payton. Don't treat Payton and the Saints like victims. They're not. They're sore losers who made far more game-deciding mistakes than the referees did on Sunday.
This is not a conventional case of a sore loser. This is a team that if the referees just do their job in that one moment, they're going to win that game.
I'll give you the great analogy. If today I leave here and go to a buffet and choke on a buffalo wing and die, don't blame the restaurant.
Shut up. Analogous. What the hell?
Look, as I told you earlier, intent matters. Yeah. There was no intent by the referee to harm the Saints.
You sure about that?
None.
That referee played for the Rams. You know that back in the 80s, they said. I mean, for real, I saw it online.
Look, Sean Payton is a sore loser and a whiner. Uncle Jimmy, what's your take? Leave the bees alone. What's your take?
Hey, man, are you really seriously defending these referees right now?
Ooh, get them.
Yeah. Are you kidding me right now?
No.
Who the hell is you? Johnny Cochran for the referees now? Man, let me tell you something, man. These referees got Saints blood all over their bodies. Huh? You run here talking about the glove don't fit, so he had to get hit. Get the hell out of here, man.
It's not the slogan.
Hey, man, Drew Brees is still laying on the sidelines of the Superdome with police chalk tape around his body. And you talking about the DNA is contaminated. Stop it.
Listen, man, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they're not victims.
What are they then? They supposed to be in the Super Bowl, and they're not because the damn referees didn't do their job. That sounds like a victim to me.
Me too.
Maybe you don't know what a victim is. Huh? Attempt don't matter. Here, I'm gonna give you an example. Let me give you an example of a victim. That chair you sitting on right there, that's a victim. That's a victim. And regardless of your intent, you got a lawsuit coming from you from that chair right there in Fox Studios when you're done.
There are no victims in football, Jimmy.
Ooh.
Merk Ellis.
Yes, sir, yes.
Merk Ellis. Look
what?
At that. Real talk.
What'd it be like?
Me and you from here.
All right.
Hey, man, you got to loan my nephew some money.
Boy, what's up?
That Chiefs bet he talking about yesterday?
Yeah.
It hurt him a little more than what he letting on.
Really?
Ed Hockley, somebody in Jason's pocket for these referees.
Uh-oh.
Real talk. Hey, no, man, real talk. No, how much you lose in Vegas?
Yeah, let's hear that again.
Hey, he was out there in Vegas shooting craps with Offset.
What?
Yeah, out there trying to make it rain on Cardi G.
Wait. It's Cardi B. B, like
bzz, B. Bzz, I know what the hell I said.
Stupid.
Jason can't afford no Cardi B. He ain't got that kind of game. Only one in the family that got game like that is Uncle Jimmy.
Oh, I can see it. I can see it right
what
now.
I tell you, they call me the notorious B.I. Jimmy. And please believe me, sweetie, I got enough to feed the needy. You understand? I sneak up from behind. I give her that line. Huh? Say them things to make her smile. What number's the dial? Fooling with me, girl, I'm going to have to pay you for that child. You understand what I'm saying? I might be old, but Uncle Jimmy's still cold.
You are dope. That B costume makes sense now, right?
Oh, man.
You a mess. Listen,
let me get to my approval
rating.
Yeah,
please.
For Sean
no
Payton.
No one is approving you.
I'm not approving Sean Payton. He's down in a lot of categories. Well, this is the first time we've rated
NFC Championship.
Job game. Performance of 19. All-time greatness of 17.
All right.
Character, 14. People don't know this. It's not just Bounty Gate. Sean Payton was a strikebreaker. He was a scab back in the NFL. Mm. Came in as a 5'10" quarterback. He was the original Kyler Murray as a scab. Mm. Authenticity, I'll give him a 19. He is who he says he is.
He's Maybe I don't confident. Agree with your stance on that picket line. I don't know why he's a scab.
Total of 69. Role player right now for Sean Payton.
Hell is a role player? He should be in the Super Bowl and he's a role player.
He's a role
as a
player. I give him much more love than that. He's a GOAT. He's a guy that they're trying to copycat. The Sean McVay is the next version of him, and they're trying to find all versions of Sean McVay and Sean Payton, who still has options out there. 22 job performance, 19 all-time greatness.
22 job performance. He just cost him the game. He should have been running the ball.
Wow.
Should have been in the Super Bowl last year.
A lot of fire. Yeah, right. Last 2 years, probably had the best team
should've.
In football. Yeah,
should have.
A little bit of that. 84, GOAT status, respect. He did have a gate, so that character is a little lower than it should be. And authenticity, he is who he is. Doesn't shy away from the moments, and he goes for the jugular. I like Sean.
Where did you have Belichick rated yesterday? Damn near the same score.
Mm-hmm.
How is Belichick on the same level with Sean Payton?
Because Belichick had more gates. A lot more gates.
Jason.
Gate barbecue.
Jason, I got snacks.
That cookie.